that because we're being challenged by time. So I'm going to open the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 282A and start the public testimony part of that. Is Representative Krieger his person in the House?
No.
Thank you. So, Representative Krieger, you're just in time. Sir, join us.
Already?
What happened, Representative, is that we don't have any House members here, so we just need to get things going so we can start the hearing portion of the public hearing. The House members are still in caucus, and so we want to get the hearing part started. Thank you and welcome.
Okay, thank you. For the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, State Representative of District 1. And I guess we're on 282, I hope.
Yes, that's right.
And maybe just brief a little background. The work group, Senator Brown, Senator Cruz, myself, and Senator Schaffer spent 14 months working on a group of bills, the 408 through 415 series, and then this bill. A lot of cooperation with DHS. The AG's office was extremely helpful. It was a thing that was gratifying to see come together. And I think I have about 6,500 miles to and from Salem during the interim just on this issue. And hardly anyone ever missed a meeting. Currently, less than 30% of children in the child welfare system are placed with relatives, and the state is facing a shortage of foster homes. Encouraging relatives and foster parents just makes sense. Research shows that children do better when placed with relatives, and as a result, don't need some of the very expensive intensive care that other children of foster children need. There is no dispute that the right policy is to encourage relatives caregiving. Senate Bill 82 passed unanimously out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and on a national level, 48 out of 50 states already provide relative foster parent support. However, the budget amount is inadequate to support all children placed with relatives. Under the co-chair's budget, over 200 children will be left behind. These are children placed with relatives who will not be eligible to receive foster care support payments for food, clothing, and shelter because they will not be poor enough to qualify. A means test, as contemplated by the co-chair's budget, is an ineffective use of state resources. In Oregon, most relative caregivers are older, oftentimes single, and have one income. The co-chair proposal has kept foster care assistance relatives at 150% of the federal poverty level. This means that a single foster parent who agrees to care for her two grandchildren would receive no foster care payments if the income was more than $24,900 a year. It's a hard job to be a foster parent, especially for the majority of the relative foster parents who are older, single, and fixed incomes. We want to encourage these relatives to be foster parents, not discourage them because of the cumbersome state policy that does not provide consistent support for relative caregivers. It just so happens that the good care for children is a good investment. The state should make this investment, assist children and their families in the process. I urge you to support this proposal of funding that package in 282. In closing, let me remind you that when we did the MEP package last year, we could not quantify the savings for that $11.5 million investment. There's no way to measure it. We saved $158 million by spending that. That's what the revenue thing came back. And Bob Brevet came over and they did an analysis of the savings. That's children not going into foster care, less prosecutions, not as much meth being cooked in Oregon. There were still other problems, but just what we did was able to accomplish that. So I think it's a great investment. We feel that the entire package has the potential to almost break even. Now, if it didn't break even, I still contend that getting foster children with relatives and with the rest of the package is kind of, to me, it's all like talking one thing. There's no way we can justify not supporting these kids, not supporting the families, not giving them the recovery programs that they need from meth, giving them an opportunity to get themselves cleaned up and be a productive citizen. And you can't measure the families that we put back together, how much that's worth. That you can't measure that in dollars and cents. So I hope that you will try to reconsider and fund as much as you possibly can.
Thank you. Questions, comments to Representative Friedler? Ms. Cote?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the representative for all your work on this set of bills, and this one in particular, all session long. Thank you.
Just in closing again, you know, I didn't come here on this issue, but somehow, all of us, can you imagine Representative Shoffler? You know, we're looking for someone, I've said before, we're looking for somebody with a laid-back, deep personality to help us. Well, he didn't have a deep personality, he's not laid back, and he's become a real advocate for this thing. And, you know, I might have come here about guns, I might have come here about natural resources or public safety, because that's where I came from. But somehow, we never missed a meeting, we all got involved, we were working with Dr. Goldberg and his staff, and it has almost consumed us. Because, you know, I got out of the hospital on a Friday, and on Tuesday, I'm here. With rivets in my belly and a girdle on, so I can stay together. Nobody missed the meeting because it was that important to us. So thank you very much.
We appreciate your work,
Madam Chair.
Very much. Representative?
Yeah, just a quick comment. And I'm a personal friend of Representative Krieger's, and he has his heart and soul in this.
Yeah, they put
help. His testimony hasn't already exhibited that.
Yes.
And I just echo Representative Kotek's comments. Thank you for a great job.
Absolutely.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morissette.
Great tie.
Absolutely, it is.
Correct tie, I might say.
Careful what you say.
You know who gave this to me?
Who gave you that?
Skip from Representative Shields' office. And then he forced me to give it to him. Okay. This is a horrible thing, but you wouldn't believe this.
Tell him to mix it.
You tried to give it to me this morning.
No, what happened was he gives me this. He says, "Well, give me the tie. If I'll carry my name place in this Democrats from Jefferson."
Now tell us who made the tie, though.
It's worse because it's a Rush Limbaugh
tie. Yeah, right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do is close the hearing on Senate Bill 282 and open the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 329A. Colleagues, let me just say this to you, and I know this is a very warm, very loving committee. I know you have a lot of questions and everything else. I'm on a timeline, and I hope that you will appreciate the timeline that we're on and work with me, and don't be upset with me if I ask you to move on and try to stop questions, okay?
Thank you.
Please, I need your support. So what I'd like to do is have Dallas to bring us up to date where we are on Senate Bill 329A. And what I also ask the audience to do is to be patient with us and let us enter your information, your testimony, into the records and not have a public hearing except through the information that you bring to us because of the timeliness, our lack of time that we have on this subject. Mr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as of now, this, you are being handed two amendments to House Bill, Senate Bill 329. Remember yesterday we talked about the A-15 amendment was 329, as it should go forward, and I had a conceptual amendment to provide funding. That amendment is incorporated in the A-20 amendment you have in front of you. If you will look to pages 27 at the bottom and the top half of 28, there, section 24 and 25 are now the completed appropriations money for this bill. And what it does is put a dollar of general fund to the health fund board, which by law then is continuously appropriated to the health fund board. So it also then provides a dollar of other fund limitation to the board to use that dollar and any other monies it may receive. That's section 24. Section 25 in the A-20 provides general fund and federal funds general fund appropriation and general and federal funds limitation to the Department of Human Services for purposes of this act, sections 2 through 13. That, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, is the substance of the A-20 amendment this year, A-15, with the appropriation language in it. And that's all. It would just replace sections 24 and 25 with definitive appropriation language. Subsequent to that, going down to Ledge Council for incorporation of the money, a couple of Scribner's errors were discovered by the co-sponsors of the bill. They rushed down to Ledge Council and had those Scribner's errors incorporated into an amendment, which became the dash A-21, which didn't have the A-20 amendment for the appropriation. So the A-21 amendment has a couple of Scribner's errors affixed to the original A-15. The A-20 provides the spending money to the original A-15. So between the two, we have the A-15 with the spending money and a couple of Scribner's errors fixed. And please, co-sponsors of the bill, correct me if I've misstated that.
The Scribner's errors was that it left out the word majority in terms of the board. What page is that?
On page 9, line 3.
Okay.
And the A-21s.
And A-21 is that page
now,
3.
It now reads, as we meant it to read, a majority of the board members must consist of individuals who do not receive or have not received in the past 2 years more than 50% of the individual's income or the income of the individual's family from the health care industry or the health insurance industry.
He's on the far right part of lines 2 of section 6, page 9. Through line 4. Mm-hmm. And read that again,
Sir Bates. Starting on top of page 9, line 2, a majority of the board members must consist of individuals who did not receive or have not received in the past 2 years, and the rest of the language is the same.
Okay.
The A-20, if I may, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. did not, it just said a board member.
Right, and left it out.
And, this stipulates that a majority of the board, it excluded all board members from that.
Right.
In effect, it allows 3 members of the board to be from the industry in one form, shape, or the other.
Okay, questions on that? Representative Garrett?
So the A-16 are not part of 20 or 21.
Madam Chair, right. Members of the committee, A-16 and off the table, yes.
Okay.
Is there another error? I have questions from the committee on said bill 329 before we start accepting motions for the amendments. Questions? Senator Wesley?
Madam Chair, I move the 820s to Senate Bill 329 into Senate Bill 329.
Senator Wesley moves Senate Bill, the A-20 amendments to Senate Bill 329. Are there objections? Representative Grant?
Question, Madam Chair. Why are we just moving? I thought 20 was in 21.
No.
No, it's not.
Right.
No.
The money portion is in 20, and the Scribner's errors are in 21. Okay?
It's too bad.
Senator Westland moves the dash A-20 amendments to Senate Bill 329. Are there any objections? Seeing none. Senator Westland?
Madam Chair, I move the A-21s into Senate Bill 329.
Senator Westland moves dash 21 amendments then to Senate Bill 329. comments, objections? Seeing none. Senator Westland.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 329 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
And I'm going to take just a few minutes before I take your motion. And I do know that there were some. I do have that Ms. Ellen Penny wanted to register her written testimony into Senate Bill 329, that AARP would like to register its comments into Senate Bill 329. Oregonians for Healthy Security, testimony by Mary Beth Healy, Executive Director, Oregonians for Health Security. Scott Gallant from the
Oregon Medical Association.
I should know that for 23 years. Oregon Medical Association registers his comments into record as well. Were there others? Passes out to each of the committee members. That's the register comments from Dr. Elizabeth Waldron. That's comments into the record. Some of the Women's Rights Coalition like to register their comments into the record. Are there other written testimony that would like to be a part of the records before we take the final motion for Senate Bill 329? Any comments?
Maybe just one, Madam Chair, to thank all those that participated in the long and late night hearings. We had 25 committee hearings. They were seemingly endless, but I want to thank all the participants in the Senate Special Committee on Healthcare Reform. It was robust discussion. Very inclusive, and all those that sat in those hard wooden chairs down in Hearing Room 50, thank you. I also want to thank many of the citizens of Oregon. Senator Bates and 22 other legislators went out on the road to take this concept to the public. So we appreciate all of your support. And with that, Madam Chair.
Excuse me, with other comments, Senator Renters?
Madam Chair, and I know that.
We have a motion.
I know the process is to hurry up for a vote. I would, because I have some concerns, with respect, and I raised them yesterday, as to where is Senate Bill 27 and where are we, how are we going to deal with also the proposal of Representative Gulick. I would give a courtesy to move it along, but I share those concerns because if we're going to do a comprehensive package, it is my belief that those are some legitimate components that need to be a part of this. And so sometimes we do things for urgency reason and don't get everything that we need to get accomplished because of speed. And so I still would like to know where we are in 27 and what are our plans, even if we just took not all of the demonstration projects that are in Representative Greenlick's proposal, but maybe a couple of those. I think that we still have time to make this a much better piece of legislation.
Senator Morissette?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I too feel that we need to include Governor Kitzhaber's bill. I hope that does come before the committee and pass. I particularly like the concepts in Representative Greenlick. I've always felt that the health care delivery system is local. We should build from the ground up. I think that fits very well with this program. That would add people to the Oregon Health Plan. It would accomplish a lot of things that we need to do immediately. So I would recommend that we put money into that plan before we leave this building. Thank you.
Representative Boone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will, in the interest of saving time, I'll say ditto on both of those.
Thank you. Senator Bates?
this real quickly. I know we've got a lot of work to do and do it quickly today. I also want to thank the same people that Senator Westman thanked. I also want to thank the people over the last 2 years that went to meetings every month for 2 years getting ready for this session and all the effort that was put in by all those people. The task force had over 20 people on it, and we had 40 or 50 attending each meeting. That was a lot of time and effort through the summer and winter when you could be spending time with your families. Some of those people in the room right now, I want to personally thank you for the effort. Senate Bill 329 is not the effect or effort of two people. It's the effect of many, many hands. We did not have any unique way of coming up with what was best for Oregon as far as health care reform was concerned. And I greatly appreciate all the efforts gone into this bill and the people who have supported and continue to support. Thank you, Madam.
Senator Westman has moved Senate Bill 329.
Just briefly. I agree with all the comments that have been made, including the reservations of Senator Winters. And I will cast a vote in favor of the motion. I just think it's important that we also clarify as a part of our record, if we're able to do that, what is the intent with regard to Senate Bill 27 and what is the intent with regard to the other bill, 3097. If we're able to say what our intent is as a part of moving forward, I think that would be very helpful to all of those who are following these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further comments? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is critical for Oregon, and with regard to what it means for Oregon taking this step today in this committee, I bet not only Oregon is watching, but I bet the nation is watching.
Thank you. Senator Westman has moved Senate Bill 329 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Recognizing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. I'd like to have, which one of you guys decided to carry it to full committee?
I'll carry it in full. You can carry it on the floor.
I didn't ask for the floor yet, Senator.
I'll take it in full.
Thank you. Senator Bates, in full. From the House? We will carry it to the House floor. We'll go to the Senate floor, so you don't have to worry about that.
I'm sorry. Good, we don't have to worry about that.
Well, Senator Wilson, you've been a doctorate for the court. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Close the hearing on Senate Bill 329 and reopen the public hearing work session on Senate Bill 282A. We'd like to ask Juvenile Rights Project people to come forward. You have heard that we are really pushing for time and appreciate very, very much your support in that way.
Given that, would you like me to begin?
Please, ma'am. Yes.
Passing that. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angela Sherba. I'm a senior attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project. This is Mark McKechnie, a social worker with the Juvenile Rights Project. You have before you the choice between Senate Bill 282-3, which is the relative foster care payment bill without a means test, and you have the dash fives, which are the mean tests. So you have a very clear decision to make. I want to say to you, I don't think you need to hear from us the importance of placing kids with relatives and how much improvement is needed in this state in terms of where we could be. We're only at 30%. We're one of two states that doesn't pay relative foster parents. And I want to say this to you rather than giving you statistics. I have been a lawyer for children and parents for 30 years. I've represented thousands of children, some of them for as long as 10 years. I was a foster parent for a year and a half. There is no doubt in my mind which was the more difficult task. You've been asked by many people to improve the dependency system for foster kids. Judges have asked you for help. Lawyers for children have asked you for help. The department has asked you for more caseworkers. CASAs have asked you for help. The important person to a child as important as we all are, as important as I like to think I am to the children on my caseload, the person that is important to those children is the one they see when they wake in the morning and they see at night when they go to bed, and in between is the person who, after a full day's of work, is sitting down doing homework with a child who's years behind because of the maltreatment they may have suffered before they came into care, and who is at the school advocating for that child, and who will not let that child move simply because they display some behaviors which are the absolute inevitable result of what they've suffered before. So I'm asking you, please, don't be the legislature that goes home having left 207 kids behind. That's what we're talking about, and the difference between these two amendments. One of them will result in your having finally caught up with the rest of the country and paying for relatives for all children in foster care, and the other one will result in your having paid for almost 8,000 children and left 207 children behind. Thank you.
You didn't ask for this, but I want to thank you so much for your work over 30 years. But more than that, I really want to thank you for that year and a half when you experienced what it was all about, because there's no greater testimony that you can give than what that year and a half was like for you. So I really, really appreciate that a lot. As a mother who raised 9 kids with 26 grandkids and 3 great-grandchildren, I can tell you it is a job.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We still have that young man in our lives.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair Carter, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark McKechnie. I'm a social worker at the Juvenile Rights Project. I've been working with children in the child welfare system for about the past 15 years, primarily as a mental health professional originally, and then now as an advocate. And I just wanted to speak to a couple points that I feel are most relevant on this issue as a social worker. One is that my professional organization, National Association of Social Workers, Oregon Chapter, is in support of this, of Senate Bill 282A with no means test, as well as the Oregon Medical Association and the Oregon Psychiatric Association, the Child and Adolescent Psychiatrists, and the county mental health directors, because we all recognize that by supporting children, by placing them with relatives up front, provides such important stability that we can help prevent doing additional harm to children down the road as they experience the foster care system. There is a clear difference between the experiences of children placed with relatives versus those placed with non-relatives. Even though there are many dedicated, tireless foster parents, including Ruth Sherbeau, who are not related to the children in their care, there is something special and something that cannot be replicated in the relationship between a grandmother or an aunt and uncle or cousins or even older siblings that are caring for children in foster care. And we see clear differences between the stability of children in staying in one home when they're placed with relatives versus other children who are placed with non-relatives and end up moving, in some cases, dozens of times down the road. And it's clear that that is damaging to their emotional well-being. The other point I wanted to make is, also as a social worker, commenting on what families need to make it from day to day. The means test that would be established in the -5 amendment is set at 150% of poverty. Now, on its face, to me as a social worker, that's extremely low. In case you need some additional context for that income limit, looking at the median income for Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, Columbia, and Yamhill counties, that income level is less than half the median of those counties, and it's just over the median income. Sorry, it's just over half the median income for the state as a whole. And that level of income is considered low to very low income. So we are only limiting assistance to the lowest income families, and we are going to leave out families who make just above that cutoff who need that help very much in order to be able to care for children consistently. So I'd just like to leave that as the second point I'll make, and I would be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. What I'd like to do is call the department up.
Shall we stay?
How many of you?
Just
you. Okay.
I encourage more questions.
On second thought, I'd like to call Dr. Goldberg up with you too. So if you give us a place at the table, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. Can you tell me I went to Kevin Starts, who does his testimony.
Certainly, Chair Carter, members of the committee. My name is Kevin George, and I work as a foster care program manager at the Department of Human Services. What you're seeing placed in front of you right now is actually my written testimony, so I won't go into too much details about it. We did talk about it, the Ways and Means, here a few months ago. And Juvenile Rights Project and other advocates have been working tirelessly on this concept for a number of years are absolutely right about the importance of relatives, the importance of stability, the importance of we never have enough foster parents, and so we've got to find more. Really, the goal is to try to reduce the number of barriers that are in place to find relatives for children. This helps us eliminate some more of those barriers that are in place around financial means for some of the children. The department has put forward this bill with the intention of putting a means test primarily for the standpoint of being fiscally responsible, and it's no more than that at this point in time. So with that, Chair Carter, I'd be happy to answer any other questions you might have. I know you've heard and read a lot about this already.
So the challenge for us as a committee, Dr. Goldberg, is that a means test versus not having a means test. Could you speak to that, or would you rather for Mr. George to speak to that?
Chair Carter, members of the committee, I'd be happy to do that. Let me first introduce myself.
You may.
For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services. You've hit on exactly the question. I think we're all in agreement that we want children to end up with their families, that we understand that one of the best ways to do that is to have a system in which we support relatives, and we are very much supportive of being certain that relatives get foster payments, and the issue is really one of whether or not to means test or not. It's, I believe, a question of it's not a policy question. I believe it's a resource question, and a question as to whether or not there are the resources within the state to do all the things that we wish to do or not. And that's always a very difficult decision, and certainly the policy is one that we all can agree on.
The People and Human Rights Project said that you'd be leaving 207 kids behind. How much money are we talking about? Approximately, do you have that?
I'm going to see if Kevin can answer that question.
Ms. Baker? Madam Chair, the bill as is, the difference between that and the governor's budget is $3 million, basically $3 million general fund with some matching federal funds. If the Juvenile Rights Project A3 amendments are adopted that makes the effective date July 1, then the difference is $1.4 million general fund. My apologies, but I do would like to vote on this, and I have another commitment. I think it's critical that we remove the obstacle with means testing. And I say this because one of the things that we learn in not only casework but in medicine and psychology is the whole issue of emotional attachment. And as our culture, as you know, that it is vitally important that we keep families and everyone together. Too often we put the dollars and cents above the issue of the child and the family. And when we do that, sometimes we pay for it in a lot, in a greater sense, later down the road. You know, where we have the youngster or the young people who have gone from foster care to foster care to foster care into the rest of our system. So I personally support the agency, and Dr. Goldberg and I have talked about this at some length. As public policy, we should be doing everything that we can to make sure that the bonding remains with children and their families. And this bonding is a part of it. If we need to subsidize that resource, that may cost us less 5-10 years later. I find it interesting that we set up systems not to repair families, but systems that destroy families. And I, for one, prefer that we make those investments of keeping children and families. And if it's the grandparents or the aunts or the uncles or the cousins who have a personal relationship with these children, the better. And that's nothing against foster care, because foster care is great. It's great. They step in and fill the gap that is very, very much needed, and we've got some wonderful parents. But I also think we need to make this investment to make certain we're having these kids that are having the emotional stability as possible. So I, for one, think we can find the resources. $1.4 million.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, yes, that's the additional amount over and above the co-chair's budget.
Senator Winters? Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with everything that Senator Winters has said, and I would just add that I do not support a means test. Going further, the co-chairs would say, well, if you want additional funds in this budget, where would you take them from? Mm-hmm. I would take them from the K-12 budget. Yes, I said that. I'm ready to receive all the arrows that will be coming in my direction, but that's where I would take it from, Madam Chair, the K-12 budget.
Ms. Kochak, and then Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the department. I guess I'm trying to understand how you would apply the means test. We don't currently means test non-relative foster parents. Am I correct?
Correct. That's correct. I think that's an important issue to be certain to stress, is that we don't now means test, in essence, strangers.
Follow-up? Yes, let me say this before we get started. I know how this committee feels. I know this committee does not want a means test. But I know that you know, as chair of the subcommittee, that I take my directions from the co-chairs. The co-chairs have not been able to find the money to further give the department in order that they might not means test. I don't want a means test either. We just don't have the resources. We have 3 children in our family. I'm grandmother to 5 kids from family members in my family. So I know how important this is, what an important issue this is today. But we are trying to rebuild our social service as well as our educational system in this state. And I don't think that we can do everything in one session. It has to be a foundational approach somewhere in order for us to do this. I'd love to not mean test even at 150% of poverty level. We just do not have the resources to be able to do that. And that's why this is not a policy issue. This is a resource issue at the moment. And I am sure that as we go forward, if there are resources to be found, and Senator Gordley was brave enough, courageous enough to say where I would take it from. And I'm telling you, I think that is very, very important that as we go forward, and if you were to register some kind of comments about where we can find the money today, and you can find enough people to vote to have that money come back to us in a way that we can give this $1.4 million, so we have to means test, we can do it. With that in mind, Ms. Kochak, and then Dr. Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate your comments, and in deference to the time, we have a lot at our refrain from grilling the department on some questions, but I do want to point out that we also have a public perception issue. We are not means testing strangers who are foster parents, who by all accounts are great foster parents, but we will go out and means test family members, right, take care of the kids. That is uncalled for and unacceptable, and if we remain one of only two states that does not help our relative parents, that is just unacceptable. And I would hope that all of folks on this committee would join me in working until we get out of here and the gavel comes down to make sure those 207 kids are not left out. Because I think it's going to be terribly difficult for the department to go to a family and say, oh, you now make 160% of poverty. We can't provide any support for you. What are we going to do with that kid if that family says, you know, I'd love to keep that kid with me, but I can't? And I think this is going to be a Sophie's choice when you're sitting there trying to figure out these rules and this criteria, and your caseworkers are going to have to tell those families that they're not getting any support anymore and what that's going to mean to that child. It's not acceptable, and we have to find those dollars. Now, the amendment at least leaves that option open. Mm-hmm. It galls me to think we have to put in saying that it's okay to means test on this. But we have to work hard to find that 1.4 general fund before we leave.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this is that all of you guys need to refer your questions, your statements, and your anger and your disappointment in the legislature. This is not a department issue. And so thank you very much for saying that. The department just doesn't want to say anything outside of what the governor or the co-chair said. Because so it's not, I'm letting you know right now, it's not the department saying, let's mean test. It is the legislature. Senator Bates, after Senator Bates, then Representative Nathanson and Representative Boone. Bates, Nathanson, and Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to put a little different twist on this, but it's very similar to what Representative Kotek is saying. I've had about 15 foster kids in my home, and we took no state money for that. There was an advantage doing that. While the older kids, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids who were, well, had no place to live, they were living at a friend's house or living in a car sometimes or living out on the school grounds. We had an advantage in doing that because those kids knew we took them in and we weren't getting paid for it. It made a powerful difference in how we dealt with those kids and how they responded to us. I think means testing is a very appropriate thing to do also. I don't know where the 150 figure came from. We generally speaking know that you're not really out of poverty in this country until you hit about 250% to 300% of the federal poverty level. I would strongly suggest that we at least take a quick look at what it means to be testing everybody. And pick a number, 20%, and see if some of the money you're giving to well-endowed families who have good means for taking care of foster kids, that they'd still stay in the system because they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart, not because they're getting paid for it. And that money couldn't be shifted to families who would really like to have these kids. To tell a child that his brother or sister can't take care of him, or aunt or uncle or grandparent can't take care of them, and they'll be shipped to a home they don't know anybody in, and that family would be paid, but their own family won't be paid, is just not acceptable. It's not good policy. So I would suggest the place you might get that money is by means testing everybody and find a level where it works for both sides. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You bet. Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks like I'll be tagging along behind Dr. Bates. Means testing is something that seems like a real hot button, and I'm sorry that it's become such a hot button. We absolutely do need to remove the barriers. We do need to find more people willing to provide foster homes for children. I agree with all of that. I, too, am curious about the 150% level. It doesn't seem quite right to me. It's not the level that's used for other kinds of tests that we do when we're establishing criteria for other kinds of services. So I wonder why the 150, and should it be a different number, 200, 250, 300, or whatever the right number is. But we're all over the map. When we see proposals coming in for different programs, there's no consistency. So if I were a member of the public, I'd say, what are you doing? And from one program to another, I have to meet, you know, I'm eligible for one and not eligible for another. So I'd say that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. In one of the pieces of material we were just handed, I'm trying to listen and read at the same time.
I read something that's suggesting, for example, that being able to save something just under $700,000 basically isn't worth it. Well, I'd say the constituents that I support, that I represent, would think that $700,000 is a significant amount of money. And if it means that amount of money can be used to provide services to other people who need services, I think that's important. The numbers relative to a budget with $1 billion in it may seem like a small percentage, but people know what real money is, and if you can stretch out a $500,000 or $700,000 to help some more people, I think that is a meaningful thing to do. With regard to it being unacceptable not to help families who provide foster care, I think it would be, I agree that it's unacceptable not to help foster families, no matter who they are, but what we're hearing today are suggestions not that we not help, but we have to figure out how within the resources we have to help as many as we can. It's over how many can we help, not whether we do or do not want to help any at all. So I hope we take action today that takes the step to start helping more foster families.
I feel very strongly about this too. I mean, I think all of us do. What my question is if you means tested the same as we're going to be voting on healthy kids on the House floor at 3, and what if you put this means test at 250% of the federal poverty level? What would that do?
Chair Carter, Representative Boone, that's part of the complexity of the bill originally designed was to say we need to have the authority to craft a means test. It didn't put in really hard, fast numbers to say 150%. 150% is something we put forward as a potential budget-building a mechanism to ask for the funding. It's not in the actual legislation, which allowed us that flexibility, as well as looking at saying we have a delayed startup of July 1, 2008. Again, that is not in the actual legislation, so it allows us that flexibility to craft it when we can do that. We've certainly tried to do our best of assessing some families currently and try to pull a household of four, as you've seen from Ms. Baker's information earlier, household of four at 150% of poverty level is $30,000. That same household of four moves up to $40,000 for 200% of poverty and incrementally like that. So we're still talking about families that do not have a lot of money, regardless of where you cut it off of 150, 175, 200, 225. It continues to get down into bottom line again. It's about a resource issue, not so much where the line was drawn.
Just a quick follow-up. Well, that's my point. So I have the same aversion to this whole issue, and I understand everything you said, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's some way we can't send a message while we buy some time to the end of the session and find this money somewhere. I keep hearing about this magic. Well, there's this little pot of money.
Well, this was going to ask you, actually, mm-hmm. Ben, that maybe there's a hidden bush somewhere.
The hidden bush we haven't looked under yet.
That's right. One of the things that we have in our favor is that this bill is not implemented until July 1st, 2008. We have a chance this coming February, as we come back to the legislature, and I want, Ms. Baker, for you to have the department to come back and report to us in the February meeting where they are and to talk about any kind of alternatives or that will give us as a legislature the opportunity. By that time, we would have had September and December forecasts behind us, and maybe it's a possibility. I don't even know. I can't make any promises because I'm not a co-chair. But we certainly do have some time by which we might fulfill it. Now, I know Dr. Bates and Ms. Kotek want to speak. But I'm going to have to ask you guys to please speak with Beverly so that we can move on to the next two issues that we have before us. Ms. Kotek?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll keep it. My question to the department is, are you permitted and are you allowed to means test non-relatives?
Chair Carter and Representative Kotek. Our experience in looking at other states is because this is state-funded general fund, it's not federal funds, you can't mean test if it's federally funded, but because it's state funds, you all have the authority to make that decision.
Would you introduce yourself?
I'm sorry, Ramona Foley, Head of Children, Adults, and Families with DHS. Quick call. So we are not permitted, any of the non-relatives who are now receiving payments, none of those can be means tested because they are federal dollars. Are there any general fund dollars going to non-relatives that are not means tested?
Chair Carter and Representative Kotak, there is a match of federal, there's federal dollars for the 4E eligible children, and those children are not means tested, except that 4E eligibility becomes a means test in and of itself because it reflects the old AFDC payment rate. That means children who would have been eligible for AFDC in 1996. And those children are not means tested, but that is an eligibility standard. So the population you have left are those relatives who the child is not fully eligible, and that's the population we're talking about here in terms of being able to free up the general fund.
That's great.
Madam Chair.
And then one last thing, the non-relatives are not means tested. The non-relative is a foster home where the child either is the recipient or 4E or the child is not the recipient. If the child is not the recipient, then they're funded through general fund.
I think the question was, can we means test the non-relatives?
Chair Carter and Representative Kotak, if we were to means test the non-relative, that would probably make us the only state that I'm aware of in the nation that actually does means test the non-relative. It's not that we could not do it. As Senator Bates mentioned, we can offer that and say to families, if you have too much income, you cannot serve as a foster family. Again, it's one that I think, as a policy, we want to think about what that message is that we also give to the public.
But it's not that we would say they couldn't be foster parents, we just wouldn't provide assistance.
Senator Carter and Representative Kotak, that is right, and we would not be able to provide 4E assistance if the child is not 4E eligible, but we could decide not to provide general fund. That's my understanding. I'm not an attorney, but that's my understanding. Senator Bates?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I first move that what we're trying to establish here is that we are going to pay ultimately, in some way, shape, or form, for relative foster care. And that's the key part of this. That's a big change for our state and one we need to make. We know it's not going to go into effect until we're back here in session anyway.
Aye.
The key thing here today is to get this bill out the way it is, the A5s, I believe, to establish that it's going to occur. And let the department have an opportunity to come back to us in February and find out if they can raise that level up. I think we'll have a resheet by then. We'll have a better picture of what's going on inside the budget. This is a $3 billion plus budget. Not that there's loose change laying around. We're not going to hang somebody out the window by their ankles and shake them. But give them an opportunity to work this. The principle here is that we're going to pay for relative foster care. The number we believe, obviously, is too low. We need to have it raised up. Maybe gotten rid of entirely as far as means testing is concerned. Let's establish the principle here today if we can and move this bill forward, knowing and expecting the department to be back in February to give us more information about whether or not they even need means testing or if they do, how high up they can move it.
Okay.
Are you ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
I am.
Five.
Yes, two. Ms. Baker, could you bring us up to date?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. You did get a packet before the meeting that included these dash A5 amendments. These are the ones that would allow the department to do a means test, and as has been discussed here, it doesn't specifically say 150% of the federal poverty level or whatever number, but the expectation would be that they would do it within budgeted resources. And again, as has been discussed, those budgeted resources may change either still during session or between now and the time of the plan July 1, 2008 implementation. So these are the amendments that the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending to line up with the budget.
I have to tell you, I'm personally committed to between now and February to come back asking that we have no means testing. That's exactly where I am, but I think today to get the foundation of this piece going and we might end up being two states, will be one state, well, one and a half states, I guess, under those circumstances, that is seeking to do some means testing. Senator Wesson.
Madam Chair, just as a historical footnote, I would like to point out that every one of your personal commitments that you have made from this dais has been met so far. So, thank you. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendments into Senate Bill 282.
Senator Westland moves the Dash 5 amendments in Senate Bill 282A. Are there any objections?
May we have a roll call vote, Manager?
Roll call vote. Considered done. Eric? If Senator Lenders were here, she had another appointment, she would be registering a no vote as well because she wants no mean testing. I wanted to say that, so she's been excused.
Okay. Representative Brower.
Aye.
Representative Nathanson.
Aye.
Representative Cote.
No.
Vice Chair Boone.
I just want to, can I comment?
After you
vote. The amendment does say may, so I will vote aye.
Thank you.
Senator Wesley?
Aye.
Senator Gordley?
No.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Chair Carter?
Aye. Motion carried. Senator Wesley, I appreciate very much what you said, because everything I promised this committee I'd work on and get back to has been carried out, and I appreciate your personal notice of that piece, and I will, as a result of my own personal philosophy, work to see that the 207 kids the Human Rights Project pointed out will not be left behind in terms of human's testing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If anyone can do it, you're the one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we've already amended the bill.
That's right. Senator Westland.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 282 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland moves Senate Bill 282A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Senator Gordley, Representative Cotet. Motion carried. House Carrier. Representative Gerard.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I will carry it on the Senate floor. I'll carry it on the Senate floor. I've never carried it, though.
Not your entire legislative career.
No, this will be the first bill I carry.
We'll try to help.
Because you guys usually. Okay.
Don't wait for Dayton. Madam Chair, do we need the other amendment on 282?
Say it again, please.
The implementation date? Does we need that?
Page 3?
No. No. Okay.
Do you want me to address the question?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, the intent of the A3 amendment was to delay the effective date of the bill but not have the rulemaking authority. With the rulemaking authority, the sense is that within those rules they can establish the effective date and that it needn't be in statute. That way, if there is funding available earlier, it could be implemented earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Baker.
House Bill.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 2469A, the TANF restructuring bill, is the next bill up. We'd like to open the committee on House Bill 2469A, relating to public assistance for families with dependent children. And we're having a work session only. And Ms. Baker will speak to this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, there was a memo that was distributed to your offices on House Bill 2469A. The issues, as we heard in the public hearing, was that this restructures the department's temporary assistance to needy family program. There were provisions added on the House side regarding child support payments to families, the family sanctions policy, transitional medical assistance, and then the Parents of Scholars program. In my memo, I identified what the initial estimates for those items were, but after working with the department, looking at their reshoot adjustments, looking at where we were relative to the TANF maintenance of effort requirements, and then identifying how much they projected to have available in TANF funds during the next biennium. We've come up with a plan for funding the additional pieces that are in 2469 that were over and above the initial governor's budget pieces, and the way that would be done would be to put additional TANF funding, $5.6 million of additional TANF funding into the children, adults, and families budget. Some general fund comes out to move to health services and to Department of Justice to backfill in the Department of Justice's budget for the change in the child support pass-through, and then to fund in the health services budget the additional transitional medical assistance. And that works as long as the transitional medical assistance implementation is delayed to October of 2008. So what we have in the way of amendments then...
Dr. Goldberg, join us back.
Yes.
Read your answer.
And I will pass these out because
you have not seen
these amendments yet. But these are the amendments that were referred to in the memo in terms of housekeeping changes and then changing the effective date of the transitional medical.
Madam Chair.
Representative Duquette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that the amendments that are getting passed out are indeed housekeeping amendments. This has been a very complicated piece of legislation. I want to recognize the department's work in making sure that we were catching all the little details before we finalized the bill. So that's why you have the 18s, I believe the 22s, and the 23 is the date change on the transitional medical. So word of honor, it's a lot of housekeeping things you don't want to know about. Very technical. Thank you. The other thing I wanted to put on the record is on page 6 of the bill in the A engrossed, there's a reference to foster care payments, and I want to clarify for the record this has nothing to do with relative foster care payments that we just had the previous discussion on. It's a housekeeping issue that LC put in there. It has nothing to do with relative foster care payments. So I was asked by the department to clarify that for the record. That's what that's
May
about.
May I remind the committee that we're trying to pass this bill out today? Otherwise, it's going to delay it.
That's all I have, Chair.
Thank you.
Department, do you concur with the amendments set before us?
Chair Carter, we concur. We haven't seen them, but we we concur.
So, you know, this chair. Now, I'm disappointed because this chair does not pass our amendments at the department.
No, we worked on them with Representative Kotek and
someone has seen them.
Chair Carter, Vic Todd, Administrator for the Office of Self-Sufficiency. We have worked very hard with Representative Kotek and others on these amendments. We've seen these amendments many times, so we are in concurrence.
Madam Chair.
Dr. Bates.
Can I ask Representative Kotek a question, please?
I'll be brief.
Representative Kotek, I have complete confidence in your amendments. And could we just move amendments one by one directly into the bill and not have a lot of conversation? I do trust you. You're making 329 amendments look really good here today. And I appreciate that.
I have nothing more to say about these amendments, and I think that would be appropriate.
Are you ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
Look at this movement.
May I just say one thing, though?
Oh, you said not
about the amendments. I want to thank the chair who has gone to the mat for pushing 2469 as brought to this committee, and I want to just say thank you for the record.
Thank you. Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, if I could just take 30 seconds. We can't exactly...
You have to take 30 seconds.
We can't exactly move the amendments as they are because the Dash 18 amendments have a... July 1, 2008 effective date for the transitional medical assistance piece, and the Dash 23s have an October 1, 2008 effective date, which is what we want. So I talked with Ledge Council, and all that we need to do, all that you need to do, is to approve a conceptual amendment that will combine these three amendments with the October 1, 2008 effective date, and then they will combine them all into one amendment for the full committee.
Madam Chair, can I move that?
You can. So, Senator Bates moved that we think
jeopardize the amendments, which was dash 18 amendments and dash 22 amendments, dash 23 amendments, into House Bill 2469A. Are there objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Let's take care.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Barbara.
I knew that it takes a little while. Senator Wesson.
Yes, ma'am. I'll just go ahead. The House Bill 2469, I move House Bill 2469 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland moves House Bill 2469A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Comments? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I didn't know it was going to go this far.
You asked us to move it fast. We moved it fast.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 5031 to the floor with the.
We'll keep going.
We're wrong here. I'm going to close the committee on House Bill 2469A and open the committee. Open House Bill 5031. Let's have Carius, Representative Kotak, to the full committee to the floor of the House on 2469A.
To the floor if possible, but I'm not on the floor.
That's not on the floor. Okay. Nancy? Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson, excuse me. So, full committee for this bill?
I'll be glad to take it.
Senator Morissette, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
I'd love to.
Senator Morissette, with House Bill 2469. Thank you very much. We are now in work session on House Bill 5031, Dr. Goldberg and Company. You have worked hard today, and I'd really want to compliment you. Ms. Baker?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'll do a little bit of introduction here. This is the first piece of the Department of Human Services budget bill that you'll be working. We won't be passing the bill out today unless you like doing pigs in a poke. This is the Children, Adults, and Families piece of it.
We had pigs for yesterday.
We had nano pigs this morning.
That prohibits pigs from being in a poke.
I told you this was an interesting committee.
Well, yes, we did.
Again, material was handed out to your offices. I do have some extra copies if you need some. I will work through the recommendations that we have. These are preliminary recommendations, basically lining up the necessary adjustments to get to the co-chair's budget and then the additional pieces that we expect will be funded. There may be some other tweaks that we will bring back when we bring the whole department's budget back. That's expected to be next Tuesday, and at that time we'll also talk in more detail about the performance measures and any budget notes for these pieces of the budget. So we'll do Children, Adults, and Families today. Tomorrow is Health Services. Thursday is Seniors and People with Disabilities. Next Monday, Department-Wide Support Services. And then Tuesday will be the wrap-up of the whole department. Again, budget notes and performance measures at that point. So that's the game plan for the department's budget.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gore.
Can we pre-tweak, in other words, get at least a little bit of a complaint in?
Yes,
in a certain area before you. I mean, since you're indicating you still have somewhat of an open mind here, I just want to speak on behalf of the Centers for Independent Living. But as far as I can tell, I'm somewhat disappointed that their budget of $1.3 million was not restored. So, nobody heard that.
Could you please say that again? This one keeps bugging me.
Well, he is. Well, no, I won't go there.
Okay.
Just to reiterate that my disappointment that the Centers for Independent Living have apparently not been refunded back to the original amount of $1.3 million. The governor's budget had $500,000, and to the best I can determine, it's still at $500,000. So, if there's any tweaking that can be done I hope you will tweak my way.
I see. Thank you very much. And, you know, we will take a good look at that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morse.
I also feel that we should look at that particular issue, because I thank you very much for mentioning that. I think that's important that we do that.
Thank you, Senator.
Senators will look into it. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Baker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then I will start walking through the memo. I will keep walking through the memo until there are questions raised. The way this is packaged, there is the memo that summarizes the changes. There's a worksheet that shows both the agency's reshoot adjustments, which we had a presentation on a couple weeks ago, and then the additional adjustments that our office is recommending. And then I've also included a comparison spreadsheet of the policy option packages so that you can track the changes from governor's budget to what the current budget recommendation is. And there are a few issues that I want to put on the table as things that we will need to deal with in the next couple of days. So on page one, it summarizes the recommended budget, $545,796,521 general fund, $2,484,666.763 total funds, 4,295 positions, 4,191.72 FTE. And you can see the comparisons there to the governor's recommended, the legislatively approved budget after Senate Bill 5547, which was the most recent rebalance, and then the 2003-05 actual budget. So the recommended budget is 19.3% general fund and 8.2% total funds higher than the 05-07 legislatively approved budget. Now, in terms of general fund, much of that is because of because of fund shifts, but there are also significant enhancements, which we'll talk about here. So this budget reflects changes based on the department-wide reshoot, again, information you were presented with several weeks ago. The co-chair's budget eliminated $13 million general fund in the package for child care provider rate increases, and that is now replaced with $13 million in federal temporary assistance to needy families funding. So instead of general fund, there's a like amount of federal funds in there. It fully funds the proposed rate increases as in the governor's budget. Just a shift in funding source. There's an additional $9.9 million in the federal TANF funds. We talked about part of that for the program changes in House Bill 2469. So if you look at this long spreadsheet on page 2 of that, you can see in more detail what those particular changes are. House Bill 2469 on line 25 of page 2 of this long spreadsheet. Some of you have a short spreadsheet.
Sure. Okay.
Those of you with copies have short spreadsheets. On line 25, there are, following that, the additions on the TANF reauthorization package. So the sanction policy change there of about $1.5 million. The child support pass-through, it's funded by adding $900,000 TANF funds in this budget, freeing up the general fund, which then will show up in Department of Justice's budget in the end of session bill, I believe, since their budget is already making its way through the process. The transitional medical, with the October 1, 2008 assumption in terms of effective date, is $3.2 million federal funds in this budget, which frees up $3.2 million of general fund, which you'll see coming into the health services budget tomorrow. And that general fund will have some matching federal funds in the health services budget to fund that piece of 2469. And then there are two additional pieces that are recommended. The first is about $2.5 million for the Family Support and Connections Program. This was added to in the initial TANF reauthorization package with about $1 million. This enhancement will make that a much more workable program. This funding basically goes largely to the local level to help provide services as needed for families, TANF families at the local level. And then there's 1.8 million and 16 positions added, so that each service delivery area will have a intensive case management master social work position to help with multiple barrier clients, cases that are the hardest to serve, so that they'll act sort of as a super consultant for caseworkers to help deal with issues that those families may be going through.
Question, Representative Lee?
Yeah, I just wanted to know what exactly that Family Support and Connections Enhancement $2.5 million buys.
Yes. Ms. Baker? Madam Chair, I'd defer to the department for more details on that piece.
Chair Carter, for the members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ramona Foley. I'm an assistant director of Department of Human Services. That will actually add to the money that we currently have in family support connections. As Ms. Baker said, it's spread across the state. It used to be, originally it was called Safety Net, and it's money that we give out to us and the Commission on Children and Families. We give the money to the local offices, and then they will contract. There's a subcontract process in the local community, and it's really geared toward families that don't meet the threshold of having a substantiated abuse or neglect case, that someone in the community may refer that family thinking they need services, they need to access services. So many of these families are problem families, but if we can help them some way through this funding source prior to there having to be a substantiated case, often that makes the difference in whether or not they become known to the child welfare system later.
A follow-up.
Could that number be lower by 1.4 million?
Thank you.
Chair Carter.
Question
now. And Vice Chair Boone, this is a Sophie's choice for sure, because these families, it is such a different issue. These families need the help at the front end of the system, or these families are very likely to lose their children to the foster care system, and then that puts us right back into the conversation we were having earlier.
So I was wondering where that...
Right. Now, these are families that are at high risk of losing children to the foster care system at some point.
Madam Chair.
Representative Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, since we have 2469 finished now, and we have talked about increased screening and assessment for folks coming into the TANF program, I know there's concern about the overlap between former TANF parents and their kids going into child welfare, hence family support and connections. I would assume that with the redesign, we might be keeping some of those folks out of child welfare because of the new enhancements. So potentially there might be some shift to something else because of the redesign.
Chair Carter and Representative Kotek, it certainly could have an impact on this particular set of families, because these families are likely to be known. They're not all known to TANF, but many of them will be known to TANF. And that's the way the program is currently designed, is to try to pick up those families that are at such high risk. If those families are being served with enhanced case management, then what that's likely to do is also free up money locally for families that are not in the TANF system. And originally, Safety Net was just vulnerable families. It was not families that were known to TANF.
Okay. Senator Morissette?
Thank you very much. And I appreciate calling my attention to this particular item, because I did ask about this earlier, and there was a three-year-old girl murdered in Springfield because of the neglect, not neglect, but the oversight of the service children and families. She wasn't high enough on the list to register as a child of need. And the Safety Net came into existence after that, and we worked very hard to put that in place. And I have been lobbied very hard by our local Safety Net people to make sure that we continue funding this program at an adequate level. And I think this is an extremely important program, so I really appreciate the amount.
Okay.
So keep your hands off of it.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, the other issue is that the department did have available TANF funds, but there is some limitation on how those funds could be used. And although we could look at alternative uses for those, they can't automatically be redirected elsewhere for particular purposes. On page 2 of the spreadsheet, I want to go back up to line 24 there and highlight that, because this is the legal representation package that was in the department's budget. In the co-chair's budget, that package was funded at half of the governor's proposed level. At this point, full funding is restored for that package, and so that legal representation package will take effect as anticipated in the governor's budget. There will be an adjustment in the Department of Justice's budget because it started out on the process with only funding for half of that package, and so they will get some additional money added back in. But again, that just brings them to where they were under the governor's budget.
Thank you very much, Ms. Baker, and to Senator Bates for bringing that out, too, because I promised the committee that we would get back to at least the governor's level in terms of legal representation, because I can't think of nothing more important than this. Than right now, our social workers are having to represent kids in court as well as to try to be their safety coordinators. And so I think that that is ambiguous at best. And so to be able to have them have us purchase more legal representation, I think, is the right step forward.
Clarification, I don't have a number on my spreadsheet. So is it an add back off of the co-chairs?
Madam Chair, Representative Kochak, there's no number on this particular spreadsheet because there's no adjustment being made to the reshoot budget, but that is why I attached the second spreadsheet that shows all the packages, because then if you look at the individual package elements, this one I believe is on the top of page 2, 101-3 legal representation, you can see that it's fully funded in the recommended budget at the same level that it was in the governor's budget.
Thank you. May I have a question, Richard?
You may.
I'm not opposed to this package. I think it's important for the state to have proper representation when they're dealing with pregnancy cases. But I would like to know if we've had a report from the department. I know when eBoard gave some initial funding for attorney representation, there was a note that we would receive some kind of report from the department during the session. I don't recall seeing one. Wanted to know what the outcomes from the previous investment have been and whether, you know, we're putting the money to good use, I guess is my question.
Chair Carter and Representative Kochak, we have actually a report that we can submit to you. We're measuring 11, we're taking 11 measures, and we work with the Department of Justice to look at what those measures are. And the package has been in place since last summer. It took us a while to get everybody hired, get them all on board. And one of the caveats when you look across those measures is to keep in mind that, of course, legal representation is one issue. There are many other variables that can impact how long the child stays in care. For example, access to drug treatment for the parent, those kinds of things. But we are encouraged. We have some anecdotal information, but we're encouraged. One of the findings, for example, is that we have to achieve something called no reasonable efforts findings. We avoid no reasonable efforts. We have to achieve reasonable efforts in order to draw down federal dollars for our cases when we go to court. And we've been able to decrease the number of cases in which we had a no reasonable efforts finding during this year. And that's one of the things that both the paraprofessionals and the legal representatives look at to help us make sure that by federal law, everything we're supposed to have done to keep the child out of care or to get the child back out of the foster care system is being done. If we don't achieve that, we lose the federal funding on that case. So that's an important goal for us. Another one, and one that we share with Juvenile Rights Project, is the whole issue around another planned permanent living arrangement. Those plans are used for children where the child can't be returned home, but the child also is not going to be adopted. So it's not the most desirable plan for children. And we've been able to, in the past year, decrease the percent of children who have that plan from 22.2% to 20.9%. And then we have other kinds of measures we're looking at, such as how many court trials are we able to avoid by having the use of legal representatives. So we'd be glad to get that report to you all and show you at least what that early data looks like.
A quick follow-up?
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's really helpful. I'm just wondering if there's been any way to gauge some of the workload issue, because one of the issues was free, you know, caseworkers still need to show up in court, but there was a sense that they would be having to do less legal work. Have we been able to quantify that at all?
Chair Carter, Representative Kochak, three things that we do know that I would categorize as anecdotal. One is we've got improved timeliness in addressing paternity issues. That's a big issue in our cases, and it was not something that social workers do as good a job as attorneys looking at the case early on. The second, yes, caseworkers are doing less paperwork, meaning they're having to file fewer petitions and affidavits because some of that work now is shared with those paralegals and with the attorneys themselves. And then the third thing that we're hearing from staff is the legal staffings themselves are very helpful because because workers are now being exposed to, here's what I have to think about whenever I've got a new case in foster care. Here are all the legal issues, and they're actually learning from those staffings. And we've had other attorneys in the system, and district attorneys, for example, who are able to contact DOJ and say, you've got a problem in a case. I think you need to take a look at it. So it's happening in multiple venues, but I do think it's very helpful for our workers to be able to have access to that kind of a service.
Thank you. I look forward to the rest of the report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the other issue I would call to your attention, it's not on this spreadsheet, but the budget does fund the Child Welfare Safety Improvement Package, which was the realignment of the child welfare staff. And during public testimony on that, you heard a lot of concern with how that package was structured, particularly the impact on social services assistants, SSA positions. And the department has worked with the union to restructure that particular package. It's still funded in this budget. We may need to make some adjustments regarding positions in FTE, but it's within the original funding amount so that it's not adjusted for at this point in the budget, but it may be something that we bring back next week once we've run through all the numbers.
Senator Representative Nathanson, and then Representative Kotak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given the comments about these two different items right next to each other, it occurs to me to observe that we've seen some pretty major investments as well as shifts in how staff are being deployed to take care of this program, and it really is. It really does need to operate as a team. It doesn't help to have all the attorneys in the world if you don't have the caseworkers, and it doesn't help to have caseworkers if there are no assistants to help manage the other kinds of tasks. It really takes all of those, plus all of the other all of the other things that are happening in various offices, apart from those three categories that I just mentioned. So at some point it seems important to make sure that as we've invested heavily in one area, we didn't forget to make the appropriate investment in some other area, that all the areas need to not only get readjusted but move forward together, not one at the expense of another. So I'm pleased to hear that the department continues to think about how that's working and how to lift everything up so that it works better rather than advantage one part of the service and leave the others lagging, which then, of course, will just have a negative impact on that other part anyway. So thank you.
Thank you. The other comment I would make,
Representative Kotak, excuse me, Ms. Megan. Was it on the same thing she was saying?
Well, it was to address the child welfare restructuring package, just to say that in the department's budget, there is money for a staffing study. They've done a staffing study, looked at various elements, program elements over the last couple of biennium. And for 07-09, the plan is to look at the child welfare workload and staffing levels, so that the package that's in the budget is not intended to be a panacea for all the system issues, but it's something that will take some ongoing effort, and we will hear back from that study in the next biennium.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Sheila. I hope to work with the department. I have some questions about this package, and we'll hopefully get them resolved. I had an analysis of your previous FTE and restructuring proposal that made me question if this was actually going to get to where we need to go around the caseload reduction, and particularly worried about workload. I wish the staffing study on workload would be done first before we did the restructuring, to be very honest. But I just want to say that now that I've seen there have been changes to proposal, I need to go back and look at that again. But this is a significant change. I understand the goal. I just want to make sure that we're actually not disadvantaging what we're trying to achieve in terms of workload. So I just need that.
Members, I know it is now 2:31, but can you give me an extra 5 minutes, and then Ms. Baker can wrap this piece up so that tomorrow we can start at a different place, if you don't mind. Thank you. Ms. Baker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. working still from page 2 of our spreadsheet, line 26 and line 29, we're eliminating limitation tied to the governor's proposal for the Healthy Kids Plan and then increasing Oregon Health Plan standard. At this point, there's no funding for those packages, and so they're coming out at this time. Line 27 just adds some additional TANF funds to cover inflation estimate in the package that didn't get picked up the first time around. Line 28 adds funding to this budget coming from the Oregon Youth Authority's budget. As you remember during the, or may not remember during the testimony, we talked about the fact that there were rate increases for this particular residential provider group, which provides behavioral rehabilitation services. That's the BRS acronym. And that the OIA budget had a significant funding increase. The department had a much smaller increase, and the rates were not in alignment. So what this does is to add funding to the department's budget so that the rates will be in alignment with the Oregon Youth Authority funding because they're the same providers providing the same services. So that's added money here, and you can see there's other in federal funds match associated with that. And then on line 39 is a small additional general fund and federal fund reduction, just correcting a reshoot adjustment. I'm sorry, line 30. Line 30.
Okay.
Just seems to still awake there. Line 30, small additional general fund and federal fund adjustment to correct a reshoot adjustment on one of the packages. The intent, as the intent in the reshoot was to take out all of the general and federal funds because enough other funds revenue would be raised to cover the cost of the position and offset those other expenditures. So then we get down to on line 32, our total recommended budget at this point for the children, adults, and families section. And as I indicated, we'll be talking with you next week on the performance measures and any particular budget notes for this section.
Question? The numbers, Madam Chair, the numbers behind package or line 29 that would have been served?
Madam Chair, you will see this in the health services budget, and that's probably the appropriate place to ask the question. What this piece is the eligibility staffing, so the people that would have been doing the income application review for that OHP standard increase package. But I'm sure John Britton would be able to tell you the program numbers and how many were expected to be served.
Well, thank you very, very much. And tomorrow we begin where this will start?
With health services.
Health services.
You will get public health, medical assistance programs, and Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services.
Thank you very, very much. You have been wonderful as always, and I appreciate this committee so much. Committee dismissed.